kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's nice to see you today. This last week, we've been doing a practice intensive, what we've been calling a practice intensive. People have participated in one way or another. It's been really lovely. How many in this room have come to some event? Wow, that's great. It's been really nice. So, I meant to get the schedule so I could tell you, but what we did is in the morning, we started at 5:50, and we had a period of zazen, and then a period of kinhin, walking meditation, and then another period of zazen, which was our usual scheduled period of zazen, and service. And then in the evening, we sat at 6:20, and then chanted together the Heart Sutra, and also a chant called the Enmei Juku Kenon Gyo, which is an invocation of the Bodhisattva of Compassion. And then had a Dharma talk and discussion, class discussion. And the kind of core teaching that we were looking at in various ways was the practice or the teachings of emptiness. So, emptiness is a really tricky word. We talk some about how tricky that word could be, because it sounds like nothing, right? Usually when we say, like, this cup is not empty, this glass is filled with water, right? If I chug this down, we would say, you'd see me coughing, but also we would say, this was an empty glass. And sometimes when we feel distress, we'll say we feel hollow or empty inside. Yeah. Or things are empty of meaning. It has this kind of negative connotation, doesn't it? Empty. But that's not the Buddhist meaning of emptiness. The Buddhist meaning of emptiness means empty of inherent existence. Empty of isolatedness, empty of separation. So we have to always complete the thought when we say that, because the flip side, the twin, the other side of the coin of emptiness is interdependence. They're the same thing, talked about from different points of view. So what interdependence means is that nothing can exist on its own. Everything is dependent upon other things. In fact, ultimately, every other thing to exist. Now, the thing, any of these teachings are easy to get confused about, because when we talk about interdependence, we often talk about things being related to other things, right? Well, the teachings of emptiness say, actually, even those things aren't really things, because if you keep looking at them and looking at them and looking at them, you'll find that it's all relationality. That's what it is. It's this dynamic relational event happening, moment by moment by moment. Nothing is permanent, nothing is fixed, nothing is isolated. And that is pretty hard for us to get our minds around. But not understanding that leads us to suffering, according to the Buddhist teachings. We suffer when we think that we're permanent and we defend ourselves against reality. So this confusion, this fundamental confusion that we often live with is ignorance in the Buddhist teachings. So ignorance is not like not knowing Chinese. I'm ignorant of Chinese. Or not knowing, it's actually this really deep confusion about the way things are. And so we make foolish choices. So one of the ways that we looked at this together was by looking at the wheel of life or the wheel of delusion. And I don't have copies for all of you, so I'm just going to... Some of you have looked at this, but I'm just going to tell you. Number one in this wheel, you've probably seen it, it's like Mara at the top, this is ignorance. The root of actions is ignorance. And then based on ignorance, we have orientations, we have consciousness, we name things in certain ways based on our sense perceptions. There's contact and feeling, and we whip around this until we have desire and becoming. So based in ignorance, we crave things, not wholesome desire. Talked about this before. We're talking about this craving. Got to have this thing. This is going to complete me. This is going to make everything okay. Based in our sense of separation, we have this sense of desire. And based on that desire, we become. You know, like they say, you are what you eat. Well, this is the same thing. What you desire, what you orient your life towards, you is the condition for your becoming. And you're reborn in each moment as that. And then you pass away, you die. This moment dies, this identity dies, and something else. But with the root cause of ignorance, we just go round and round and round and round and round. So what we want to look at in our lives, what we want to think about, is how do we address this ignorance, this confusion about the way we are. How do we undo, or how do we live a life that undoes? You know, if we think we undo things, oftentimes it's like trying to decide to help somebody. You know, sometimes you may have real ideas about how you're going to help somebody, and it doesn't fit. So we can have all kinds of ideas of how we want to undo this ignorance that just are cockeyed and lead us down further path. So one of the ways that we can undo ignorance is to find a practice, something that we can, a way of life that we can follow, that we can rest in, that by its very nature undoes ignorance. That we can trust that practice. So Zazen is that practice. Zen practice is that practice. You take in the teachings, you sit Zazen, and by the very fact of entrusting your life to that wisdom path, your life has changed. You're changed. So your fundamental ignorance becomes more clarified. Have you ever had that experience where you look back and you say, wow, what was I thinking? Well, that what was our thinking is a greater clarity about the nature of our lives together, right? A little bit more clarity. So what was I thinking? Oh, well, I was doing the best I could at that time. That's as far as I could see. And now I can see a little more clearly. But how do we live a life in which we see a little more clearly? In which we see things a little more accurately? A little more heart? A little more connection? Because seeing clearly puts us into right relationship, into connection. That's what we see. So one of the other... maps that we used was It's called the Yogacara. And it's a different way of understanding how we can undo our ignorance. And without going into a lot of detail, the map of this understanding is that sense perceptions come in, we build a rudimentary understanding of what we think life is, and then the operating principle of the self-centered self gets involved and warps reality according to us being the center of the universe. This is called the seventh consciousness, manas. And based on that, we take actions. And according to this model, we plant seeds. We plant seeds of patience. We plant seeds of kindness. We plant seeds of anger. We plant seeds of jealousy. We plant seeds of harshness. We plant seeds of generosity. And those seeds condition us and color, perfume our life. So the linchpin of this model is manas, is that aspect of us that is toxically self-centered. Not wholesomely self-centered, but toxically self-centered. Thinks itself to be separate, at war with reality. I gotta get it, right? The good news is that this self-centered self can be transformed, is transformed in our practice to an organization and a way of living that sees all equally in a wholesome way. There's a teaching, an early teaching by the Buddha that I think addresses this too. And he's talking specifically about feelings. Feelings not like emotions, but feelings of orienting feelings of positive, negative, and neutral. So this is the Salata Sutta. It's called the Arrow. And I'm just going to read you part of it. This is the Buddha speaking. Monks, an uninstructed run-of-the-mill person, moi, right, feels feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, feelings of neither pleasure or pain. One of the fundamental things that happens in our consciousness. A well-instructed disciple of the noble ones also feels feelings of pleasure, feelings of pain, feelings of neither pleasure nor pain. So, right off the bat, he's saying, you're not getting out, you're not exempted from life as it is. So what's the difference? What distinguishing factor is there between the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones and the uninstructed run-of-the-mill person? In other words, what happens when you start to dispel ignorance, this fundamental ignorance? And the disciples say, for us, Lord, the teachings of the Blessed One are the root, our guide. It would be good if the Blessed One, meaning the Buddha, would explicate the meaning of this statement, and then we'll remember it. In that case, monks, listen and pay close attention. I will speak. As you say, Lord, the monks responded. Now, we have to listen to this as one way to listen to this is when we are doing our best to dispel ignorance, we want to listen to the teachings. We want to listen to wise friends, wise counsel. We want to study. But we also want to listen to our own hearts, our own awakened nature. Stop and listen. We will listen and pay close attention. The Blessed One said, when touched with a feeling of pain, the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person sorrows, grieves, laments, and beats his breast, becomes distraught. So he feels two pains, physical and mental, just as if they were to shoot a man with an arrow and right afterwards to shoot him with another one, so that he would feel the pains of two arrows. In the same way, when touched with a feeling of pain, the uninstructed run-of-the-mill person shoots a second arrow. The second arrow is the arrow of ignorance. The first arrow is the stress and pain and difficulty that we can have in our lives. We don't not have that. I don't know a single person who has not struggled in their life. Do you? You know, not had loss, not had pain, not had difficulty. That's the first arrow. The second arrow is when we understand that with ignorance, when we shoot the second arrow. Like, so the Buddha says, now the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones, when touched with the feeling of pain, does not shoot the second arrow, does not beat his breast or become distraught. He feels one pain, just as if they were to shoot a man with an arrow and right afterwards did not shoot with another one, so that they would feel the pain of only one arrow. This is the difference, this the distinction, this the distinguishing factor between the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones and the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person. For a learned person who has fathomed the Dharma, clearly seeing this world and the next, knowing the dustless, sourless state he discerns rightly, has gone beyond becoming to the further shore. So what this means is has dispelled ignorance completely. This is how we can practice with the spell. This is one of the ways that we can practice with dispelling ignorance. It's a helpful vision, isn't it? You know, to say, right, okay, I have a loss, I have a pain, I have a difficulty, but am I going to shoot the second arrow? What's the second arrow? What's my ignorance about this situation? Can I sit down with it? Can I be clear with it, as clear as I can? We can care for the pain of the first arrow. We can attend to what's needed. When we can see clearly, we can act clearly, right? We can respond with care, with discernment. We don't indulge in judgment. I was thinking, remembering back when I visited friends in Boulder, Colorado. And we were chatting in the living room, and their dog had something in his ear. The dog was scratching its ear. And one of the women just kind of slid down off the chair and onto the floor and just calmly took hold of the dog and put some drops in his ears. It said, oh, basically, she was treating the dog. Right, because it had some problems, and she knew the problems, it was time to treat the dog. But what I noticed about this was how she'd been a pediatrician for many years, and a Zen teacher for many years, and she just kind of acted with great gentleness, simplicity, like, oh, this needs to be taken care of. This is the way you do it. Her hands on the pooch were very calm. Dog clearly did not want to have his ear messed with, but the whole process was very calm. This is responding to the first arrow, right? This is what we can do with ourselves and with others. What's needed? How can I respond with clarity and calmness? How can I not shoot a second arrow? Now, part of not shooting the second arrow, not indulging in ignorance, is if we judge the second arrow, that's a third arrow, and then there's a fourth arrow, and then there's a fifth arrow, and pretty soon we're like a pin cushion with arrows sticking all out, you know? So wherever we can break the chain, wherever we can do that, that is a moment of clarity. So the important point is to cultivate moments of clarity, to cultivate seeing through ignorance, to cultivate stability, kindness, clarity, wherever we are. This is one of the reasons we call this morning program Come As You Are Zen, is because that's where we are. That's what we can do. We don't expect ourselves to be anything else. We have to cultivate this posture so that when we notice that we're a pincushion, we can stop and say, ah, oh, there it is. There it is. That is ignorance. So, I want to read you one other thing. This is something that Katagiri Roshi wrote. He was a wonderful Zen teacher. And he wrote this about... teaching that Dogen Zenji calls identity action. That's one of the methods of guidance of a bodhisattva. And identity action means that we are moving with one another. We just had Oryoki breakfast this morning here, which is a formal way of eating. Please come and try it sometime. And it's a little complicated, do you think, for those of you that, you know, even if you've been doing it for a while, there's a way that you do things, and you serve, and you have the bowls, and the spoon goes one way, and the chopsticks go another way, and all this. But it's also quite beautiful. And it's a way of sharing food together that is respectful of each other. It's like a dance. And sometimes we step on each other's feet, but we dance together. When we move in the Zendo, we want to move together. When my friend was treating her dog, that was identity action. She was keyed in with the dog and responding to what's needed. So when we see clearly the teachings of emptiness, that everything is interconnected, we have an opportunity to move with everything. And that's skillful. So this is what Katagiri Roshi has to say about identity action. We are more or less ignorant and crazy. But it doesn't matter. We are already ignorant, so we must be right in the middle of ignorance and make the best of ignorance. That is all we have to do. But usually we add something extra to ignorance. We hate it, and our life goes away from us. How can we be free from ignorance? How can we take care of ignorance? If we see life as an object separate from us, it is easy for us to create fear and anxiety and confusion. When we see our life, we feel many things. That is called experience. Of course it is okay, but it's not the total picture of the way to live. We must put it aside and be one with our life. That is all we have to do. Even though we know Buddha's teachings pretty well, ignorance comes up very quickly in our daily life. So day by day, we have to do our best to practice identity action because they are aware of how ignorant everyone is. Bodhisattvas take a vow to practice identity action continually. So, the Venerable Katagiri Roshi tells us, we are more or less ignorant and crazy. So let's just start with that. In other words, purity is not the point. Absolute purity is not our aim. Our aim is to dive into this life of ignorance, complexity, incompleteness, mistakes, and practice clarity the best we can, practice seeing these arrows, practice being saturated by the teachings, so that we can come to the true understanding of emptiness, which is identity action. And this is not about being, this is about the human realm. So identity action is identity with other people and beings who are also struggling. You know, we're not lifted out into some realm where we just, you know, smell something and we're realized beings like this. No, we're in this world. So identity action is with this one and with these ones. And that is the way we practice the teachings of emptiness. So this kind of turns on our head any model of perfection and any model that we have of everything's going to settle down and we're going to see clear, completely clearly, all just ignorance is dispelled, and whew, we got it. That's not the way it works. When we think of identity action and we visit these teachings and we have these models and we talk together and we practice together and we serve each other and we eat together and we weep together and we do all this together, that is what dissolves ignorance, right? And it dissolves the impact of ignorance. So this is what we return to over and over again. Yeah. Over and over and over and over and over and over. Because as Kadagiri Rosha says, we're all a little bit crazy, or maybe more than a little bit crazy sometimes. And ignorance is a part, is woven into our lives. But there is hope. Not for perfection, but for being alive.